Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is a Bloomberg Daybreak for this Thursday, November 15th, 2018. Coming up this hour,
the pound weakens as a key member of Theresa May's cabinet resigns.
Fed Chairman Jay Powell warns of headwinds facing the U.S. economy.
China outlines concessions in its trade dispute with Washington.
And Warren Buffett ends his 20-year tie-up with Walmart.
The fire death toll continues to climb in Northern California. Plus, 17 Democrats have reportedly signed a letter saying they won't vote for Nancy Pelosi as House Speaker. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Knicks lost in Oklahoma City. The Nets beaten by the Heat. And the Mets' Jacob DeGrom won the National League Cy Young Award.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
A good Thursday morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The pound is weakening sharply as the UK's Brexit secretary resigns on protest of Theresa May's Brexit deal. It is coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And right now, the pound down 1.6% against the dollar at $1.2786. The euro this morning at $1.1282. The yen 113.39. S&P futures are lower, down 2 points. Dow futures down 12. NASDAQ futures are higher, up 11. The DAX in Germany is down 0.1%. CAC in Paris down 0.5%. FTSE 100 up 0.2%. Nikkei 225 in Japan was down 0.2%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong gained 1.8%. 10-year Treasury up 9/32, yield 3.09%. Yield on the 2-year 2.83%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.8% or 41 cents to 55.84 a barrel, and COMEX gold, little change at 12.1080 an ounce. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with the UK moving into the next phase of its Brexit saga, and what a phase it is. Doubts are surfacing now about Theresa May's ability to secure backing for her plan to leave the European Union and even to survive as Prime Minister. The latest blow, resignations of Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab and Secretary of State for Work and Pensions Esther McVeigh. Bloomberg's Maria Tadeo reports from Westminster.
There is really Brexiteer anger. A lot of question marks to whether we could get more resignations and possibly perhaps a leadership challenge. All of this is still very much up in the air, I think, for Prime Minister May today. She just has to make a very good case. The way she presented it was take it or leave it, really.
The resignations of Raab and McVeigh are seen as severe blows to May, who is set to speak 30 minutes from now. The pound is weaker ahead of the Prime Minister's remarks. Right now it's trading at $1.2798.
Well, Nathan, shares of UK banks are tumbling as well. Barclays is down 6%. Royal Bank of Scotland is lower by 6%. And Lloyds Banking Group is down 5%. Money markets now see the first rate increase from the Bank of England coming in 2020. Estimates yesterday had called for a hike as early as November of 2019.
And we're also digesting remarks from Jay Powell overnight. The Federal Reserve Chairman says the U.S. economy could face headwinds as the central bank weighs how far and how fast to hike rates.
You know, we have to be thinking about how much further to raise rates and the pace at which we will raise rates. And I think the way we will be approaching that is to be looking really carefully at how the markets and the economy and business context are reacting to our policy.
Some of the headwinds Powell sees include slowing demand abroad and fading fiscal stimulus, plus the looming trade dispute with China.
To the extent that more and more products are subject to tariffs, you could see a little bit higher inflation and a little bit lower growth.
Still, Powell says the economy is strong and still has room to grow faster.
Powell's remarks don't appear to be altering expectations for policy, with Treasury's little changed following his comments. Steve Blitz is chief U.S. economist for T.S. Lombard.
You know, our forecast is they go in December. It's not a very hard forecast to make right now. And that they go in March, they likely go in March. But that after that, I think they're going to call it a day.
Chairman Powell says officials are looking carefully at financial markets, but that moves in stocks are just one of several factors taken into account by the central bank.
We have new developments in the U.S.-China trade dispute. Word that officials in Beijing are outlining potential concessions to the Trump administration. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis reports from Hong Kong.
Our sources say these are the first concessions since summer, but they also say the commitments fall short of real reform. For instance, one offer is said to be a rehash of something already being implemented, that being raising equity caps on foreign investment. In any case, one source says the talks are continuing and constructive. But Derek Scissors from the American Enterprise Institute is skeptical. He says don't expect any real progress unless and until USTR Robert Lighthizer is ordered into the fray. In Hong Kong, I'm Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Brian, thank you. Oil gaining ahead of today's weekly inventory report from the Energy Information Administration. Bloomberg's Jessica Summers has more.
Investors are gearing up for an eighth straight increase in U.S. crude inventories. Analysts surveyed by Bloomberg are forecasting a gain of 3.2 million barrels, while the API reported an 8.79 million rise. West Texas Intermediate crude broke its 12-day losing streak, but if the build comes in closer to what API reported, we should see some renewed selling pressure in the oil market. In New York, I'm Jessica Summers, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jessica, thank you. And NYMEX crude oil is down 0.9% at $55.74 a barrel. Brent down 0.25% at $65.97.
And turning to corporate news now, after 20 years, Warren Buffett is saying so long to Walmart. We get the story from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway sold its last Walmart shares, ending a relationship that dates back more than two decades. The world's largest retailer was once one of Berkshire's five biggest equity holdings, as recently as 2014, valued at more than $5 billion. But Amazon's encroachment since then prompted Berkshire to pare down that stake. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. We have even more on Walmart. The retailer sent to report third quarter results this morning. Here with a preview is Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Spending on back-to-school merchandise and groceries and improved store operations likely boosted traffic and same-store sales. But investors will be looking beyond those numbers. Retail columnist Sarah Halzack of Bloomberg Opinion says Walmart's e-commerce numbers will be important.
The company has said it expects 40% growth on this measure for the full year, and investors are going to want to see something in that neighborhood.
Analysts expect Walmart will post an adjusted profit of $1.01 a share on revenue of nearly $125.5 billion. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. And again, the British pound down about 1.5% against the dollar. We straight ahead to the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It is 5:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here to tell us more of what's going on around the world, including grim work continuing in Northern California. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. More than 450 people have now been assigned to comb through charred remains and search for more bodies in the Northern California town around Paradise. The devastating wildfire has killed at least 56 people. Butte County Sheriff Corey Honey says the death toll climbed after the remains of eight people were found in the ashes.
All eight of those human remains were found in the Paradise area. Six were found inside structures. Two were found outside of structures.
Authorities say 130 are unaccounted for. Many of the missing are elderly. 17 Democrats have reportedly signed a letter saying they won't vote for Nancy Pelosi for the House Speaker. According to CNN, five additional Democrats have pledged not to support her, but have yet to sign the letter. Pelosi's spokesman says that Pelosi is very confident in her support among members and members-elect. Michael Avenatti, the lawyer who sparred with President Donald Trump on behalf of adult film star Stormy Daniels and has flirted with running for president himself, has been arrested on suspicion of domestic violence. Avenatti called the allegations completely bogus.
I have never struck a woman. I never will strike a woman. I have been an advocate for women's rights my entire career.
Avenatti's estranged wife defended him, saying he's a very good man. A judge in Florida ended a hearing last night without ruling on a recount that Democratic Senator Bill Nelson is calling for in his U.S. Senate race with GOP Governor Rick Scott. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has more.
This is a suit that Democratic Senator Bill Nelson says wrongly invalidated votes in the original count. This is a battle closely watched by both parties, with the president saying that Democrats are trying to break the law and steal the election, and Democrats like Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio.
They can't win elections because there's way more of us than there are them. They can't win elections fairly. They win elections by redistricting and reapportionment and voter suppression.
He says especially of African-American and young voters. There are several legal battles playing out now in Florida. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
National Security Advisor John Bolton Bolton's top deputy, Mira Ricardle, would leave the White House a day after First Lady Melania Trump called for Ricardle's ouster. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. 5:09 now on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Investors Bank. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, the guy from the Baseball Writers Association, summed it up perfectly when announcing that Mets ace Jacob DeGrom had won the National League Cy Young Award. He said DeGrom got more support from the writers than he did from his Mets teammates. A superb but unusual season. His record was just 10-9, despite setting a major league record for consecutive starts without allowing more than three runs. The Mets never seemed to score any runs when DeGrom was on the mound. Didn't mean he wasn't the best pitcher in the National League, and he ended up winning the award in a landslide, got all but one first place vote.
It's awesome. Truly an honor. Kind of speechless, honestly. You know, I got to thank God just for the talents and abilities that he's given me and the opportunity to play this game that I love. Also want to thank my family, my wife, Stacy, and the kids for the support that they give me, and the Baseball Writers Association for the votes, my coaches, teammates, and just everybody involved. You know, couldn't have done it without everybody.
He's the fourth Met to win the Cy Young, joining R.A. Dickey, Doc Gooden, and Tom Seaver, who won three times. The Mets have never had an MVP. That award goes out tonight. The AL Cy Young winner was Tampa Bay's Blake Snell. The Knicks in Oklahoma City, the Thunder without their star Russell Westbrook, didn't matter. OKC won 128-103, Paul George 35 points. The Nets without their top scorer Caris LeVert lost at home to Miami 120-107. And the Lakers win over Portland, 44 points for LeBron James. He moved past Wilt Chamberlain into fifth on the NBA's all-time scoring list. College basketball, Seton Hall lost at Nebraska. Villanova, who's won the championship two of the last 3 years, got blown out at home by Michigan. The Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, another sports news. Mark Cuban has gotten out of high-frequency trading. The Dallas Mavericks owner tells Bloomberg he recently sold his stake in Virtu Financial. Though a longtime critic of speedy trading, the billionaire revealed earlier this year that he had invested in that company. It is one of the more successful practitioners of the widespread market-making technique. Checking British pound, it is now at $1.2790. That is a drop of 1.5%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Sports brought to you by Investors Bank. Business wins here. Connect your team with the experts at Investors Bank for business solutions to move your business forward. Investors Bank, banking in your best interests. Member FDIC.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The pound is slumping and British bonds jumping as the UK Brexit secretary resigned in protest of Prime Minister Theresa May's deal to exit the European Union. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And right now, the pound is at $1.2764. It's down about 1.8% against the dollar. The euro is at $1.1281. The yen, 113.37. S&P futures are little changed. Dow futures up 7. NASDAQ futures up 23. The DAX in Germany is down 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 9/32, yield 3.09%, and the yield on the 2-year 2.84%. Stocks in Asia finished the day higher after reassuring words from China's premier boosted sentiment on China's CSI 300. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally reports from Singapore.
Karen, yes, that index closed higher by 1.2% to 3,242 points as Chinese real estate stocks rose on stimulus bets and as new home prices quickened in October despite property curbs. Gains in Tencent, meanwhile, on the back of its earnings report, boosted Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index. The only major Asian market which closed in the red was in Tokyo. A weaker dollar means a stronger yen, and you know what that means? Falls in Japanese equities. The Nikkei 225 closed down 0.2% to 21,803 points. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. And we do get earnings this morning. We'll hear from Walmart, among other retailers, including JCPenney and Nordstrom. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. At least 56 people are confirmed dead as the death toll continues to climb from wildfires in Northern California. Officials say 8 more bodies were found near the town of Paradise. About 130 others are missing. A judge is expected to rule this afternoon on whether President Trump has the authority to pull the press pass of a reporter he does not like. CNN's Jim Acosta last week had a verbal skirmish with President Trump during a press conference. In the NBA, the Knicks and Nets lost. The Celtics and Wizards were winners. In the NHL, the Bruins and Capitals lost. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. We're coming up on 520 now on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Joined on the line now by Michael Purvis, the Chief Global Strategist at Wieden & Company. Nice to talk to you on this extraordinary morning, Michael. But let's start with what Fed Chair Jerome Powell had to say at the Dallas Fed. We've had a night to digest his remarks about the outlook for the U.S. economy. What were your takeaways?
Well, I thought it was interesting and, you know, a little bit predictable in a sense. You know, back in early October when we saw bond yields race higher after Powell's comments that we were far from neutral and there seemed to be a guy fully immune to Trump tweets and pretty much not model-based, but really looking at, look, the ISMs we just got were really good and we're going to keep hiking until they're not good and all that. And I think what's happened here is that, we've had some tightening of financial conditions since then, that he can certainly point to. And, you know, the elephant in the room that is impossible to contextualize is the trade, issues. It could be very inflationary. And I think my own interpretation is that Powell and his colleagues wanted to get, wanted to normalize as much as they could while they could, so that if we do start seeing either an economic weakness from trade on the one hand, or get ahead of any inflationary pressures from trade that might come out of it. It just, we don't know where Trump is going on trade. He could resolve it quickly at the G20 coming up at the end of the month, or maybe not. And so it's a risk factor that the markets and Powell have to contend with. So I think the, for him to, sort of hint at more of a dovish hike coming up in December, which is how I read his discussion yesterday, to me it seems normal enough. And the concept of the economic, this inflation-like economic miracle this year, miracle's an overstatement, but, the strength we've seen, is that it fading into 2019 is what he's starting to hint at. So I think it's actually a time where you really have to consider, when the Treasury market is so short Treasuries on the long end of the curve that maybe going the other way.
Now, we're seeing some dollar strengthening again this morning. Dollar strength has been a big story in this period of the cycle, and the pound certainly weakening significantly this morning on the news that Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab and other members of May's Parliament are heading for the exits. May speaks in just a few minutes. Where do you see Brexit going?
Well, I think this is a reminder that this Brexit is threading this needle on Brexit is much easier said than done, and that the process by which this goes through is A, very time consuming, and B, prone to all sorts of political events such as we just had earlier today. And so I think what this means, the news flow is going to be obviously very dynamic coming out of the UK. I think it's also a little bit of a reaffirmation that, for all of the issues going on in Italy and with populism broadly throughout Europe, that undercurrent not being eliminated by any stretch, but actually doing an exit, whether from from the euro or from the broader euro project, is easier said than done. And so in a way, all ultimately this helps to strengthen, for all of Brussels' warts, this helps to strengthen their hand there, and it makes things, the threat from further departures and, say, for example, Italy, a little less. The politicians advocating for that are just have to face more risk, and therefore it reduces that sort of existential European risk of Europe, the Euro project falling apart in the coming years.
Only about 30 seconds left. Michael, are we at risk more now than we were yesterday of a no-deal Brexit, do you think?
It certainly seems that way. I think going to a referendum, it doesn't seem like the obvious path. So, a no deal in the short term seems increasingly likely.
Michael Purvis, Chief Global Strategist for Wieden & Company. We'll have to leave it there for now. And I want to let you know that Prime Minister Theresa May is due to speak to Parliament in just a few minutes here, scheduled to address lawmakers at 5:30 Wall Street time. You'll hear Prime Minister May's remarks live here on Bloomberg Daybreak. As we continue to track the British pound, it is now weaker by 1.7% against the dollar, now at $1.2766. Futures contracts on Wall Street pointing to a modestly higher open. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's brought to you by the Israel Philharmonic with conductor Zubin Mehta and violinist Itzhak Perlman at Carnegie Hall for one performance only on Sunday, February 3rd. For tickets, visit carnegiehall.org.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130
to Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991
to Boston.
Bloomberg 1061
to San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960
to the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119
and around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it is 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. The pound is weakening sharply after the U.K. Brexit Secretary and Secretary of State resigned in opposition to Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit plan. Bloomberg Daybreak Europe anchor Marcus Carlson joins us live from London with the latest. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning, Karen. Good morning, Nathan. Sterling is not the only casualty this morning. Gilt yields are tumbling as expectations for a Bank of England rate hike fall. And UK banking stocks are also tanking. The trigger was Dominic Raab's resignation from Theresa May's cabinet. He's the second Brexit secretary to walk out in a matter of months, and it's seen as a blow to the Prime Minister's efforts to push her EU divorce deal through Parliament. To add insult to injury, Pensions Minister Esther McVeigh has also walked out alongside a junior minister this morning. The question is also whether Theresa May's own position is untenable. At least one member of Parliament has told UK media this morning that she's sent a letter to call for a leadership challenge. Live in London, I'm Marcus Carlson, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Marcus, right, thank Marcus. You. We take you now to the UK Parliament where Theresa May is addressing lawmakers. Let's listen in.
In the negotiations, and a special European Council will be called for Sunday the 25th of November. This puts us close to a Brexit deal. Mr. Speaker, what we agreed yesterday was not the final deal. It is a draft treaty. It is a draft treaty that means that we will leave the EU in a smooth and orderly way on the 29th of March 2019, and which sets the framework for a future relationship that delivers in our national interest. It takes back control of our borders, laws and money. It protects jobs, security and the integrity of the United Kingdom, and it delivers in ways that many said could simply not be done. We were told that we had a binary choice between the model of Norway or the model of Canada, that we could not have a bespoke deal. But the outline political declaration sets out an arrangement that is better for our country than both of these, a more ambitious free trade agreement than the EU has with any other country. And we were told we will be treated like any other third country on security cooperation. But the outline political declaration sets out a breadth and depth of cooperation beyond anything the EU has agreed with any other country. So let me take the House through the details. First, on the withdrawal agreement, the full legal text has now been agreed in principle. It sets out the terms on which the UK will leave the EU in 134 days' time on the 29th of March 2019. We have secured the rights of the more than 3 million EU citizens living in the UK and around 1 million UK nationals living in the EU. We have agreed a time-limited implementation period that ensures businesses only have to plan for one set of changes. We have agreed protocols to ensure Gibraltar and the sovereign base areas are covered by the withdrawal agreement. And we have agreed a fair financial settlement far lower than the figures many mentioned at the start of this process. Mr. Speaker, since the start of this process, I have been committed to ensuring that our exit from the EU deals with the issue of the border between Northern Ireland and Ireland. I believe this issue can best be solved through our future relationship with the European Union. But the withdrawal agreement sets out an insurance policy should that new relationship not be ready in time at the end of the implementation period. I do not pretend that this has been a comfortable process, or that either we or the EU are entirely happy with all of the arrangements that have been included within it. But of course this is the case. This is an arrangement that we have both said we never want to have to use. But while some people might pretend otherwise, there is no deal which delivers the Brexit the British people voted for, which does not involve this insurance policy. Not Canada plus plus plus, not Norway for now, not our own white paper. The EU will not negotiate any future partnership without it. As the House knows, the original proposal from the EU was not acceptable, as it would have meant creating a customs border down the Irish Sea and breaking up the integrity of our United Kingdom. So last month I set out for the House the four steps we needed to take. This is what we have now done, and it has seen the EU make a number of concessions towards our position. First, the EU proposal for a Northern Ireland-only customs solution has been dropped and replaced by a new UK-wide temporary customs arrangement that protects the integrity of our precious union. Second, we have created an option for a single time-limited extension of the implementation period as an alternative to bringing in the backstop. As I have said many times, I do not want to extend the implementation period, and I do not believe we will need to do so. This is about an insurance policy. But if it happens that at the end of 2020, our future relationship is not quite ready, the UK will be able to make a choice between the UK-wide temporary customs arrangement or a short extension of the implementation period. Third, the withdrawal agreement commits both parties to use best endeavours to ensure this insurance policy is never used. And in the unlikely event that it is needed, if we choose the backstop, the withdrawal agreement is explicit that it is temporary and that the Article 50 legal base cannot provide for a permanent relationship. And there is also a mechanism by which the backstop can be terminated. Finally, we have ensured full continued access for Northern Ireland's businesses to the whole of the UK internal market. Mr. Speaker, the Brexit talks are about acting in the national interest. And that means making what I believe to be the right choices, not the easy ones. I know there are some who have said I should simply rip up the UK's commitment to a backstop, but this would have been an entirely irresponsible course of action. It would have meant reneging on a promise made to the people of Northern Ireland during the referendum campaign and afterwards that under no circumstances would Brexit lead to a return to the borders of the past. And it would have made it impossible to deliver a withdrawal agreement. As Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, I have a responsibility to people in every part of our country, and I intend to honour that promise. Mr. Speaker, by resolving this issue, we are now able to move on to finalising the details of an ambitious future partnership. The outline political declaration we have agreed sets out the basis for these negotiations, and we will negotiate intensively ahead of the European Council to turn this into a full future framework. The declaration will end free movement once and for all. Instead, we will have our own new skills-based immigration system, based not on the country people come from, but on what they can contribute to the UK. The declaration agrees the creation of a free trade area for goods with zero tariffs, no fees, charges or quantitative restrictions across all goods sectors. No other major advanced economy has such an arrangement with the EU, and at the same time we will also be free to strike new trade deals with other partners around the world. We have also reached common ground on a close relationship on services and investment, including financial services, which go well beyond WTO commitments. The declaration ensures we will be leaving the common agricultural policy and the common fisheries policy. So we will decide how best to sustain and support our farms and our environment, and the UK will become an independent coastal state once again. We have also reached agreement on key elements of our future security partnership to keep our people safe. This includes swift and effective extradition arrangements, as well as arrangements for effective data exchange on passenger name records, DNA, fingerprints and vehicle registration data. And we've agreed a close and flexible partnership on foreign security and defence policy. Mr. Speaker, when I first became Prime Minister in 2016, there was no ready-made blueprint for Brexit. Many people said it could simply not be done. I've never accepted that. I've been committed day and night to delivering on the result of the referendum and ensuring the UK leaves the EU absolutely and on time. But I also said at the very start that withdrawing from EU membership after 40 years and establishing a wholly new relationship that will endure for decades to come would be complex and require hard work. I know it's been a frustrating process. It has forced us to confront some very difficult issues. But a good Brexit, a Brexit which is in the national interest, is possible. We have persevered and have made a decisive breakthrough. Once a final deal is agreed, I will bring it to Parliament and I will ask MPs to consider the national interest and give it their backing. Voting against a deal would take us all back to square one. It would mean more uncertainty, more division, and a failure to deliver on the decision of the British people that we should leave the EU. If we get behind a deal, we can bring our country back together and seize the opportunities that lie ahead. And, Mr. Speaker, the British people want us to get this done and to get on with addressing the other issues they care about. Creating more good jobs in every part of the UK, doing more to help families with the cost of living, helping our NHS to provide first-class care and our schools to give every child a great start in life, and focusing every ounce of our energy on building a brighter future for our country.
She says voting against it would take us back to square one. Bloomberg Daybreak Europe anchor Marcus Carlson is back with us now. Your reaction to what May had to say, Marcus?
Well, I think this is Prime Minister May fighting for her political life. Her fate as Prime Minister is really intertwined with the draft divorce deal that her government struck a little bit earlier this week with the European Union at a technical level. She used three main arguments really to defend this deal. She said, first of all, in an effort to really placate her critics, that this is not a done deal just yet, sort of signalling that this agreement could still be tweaked. She said as well that this is essentially as good as it gets. This is a bespoke Brexit deal that no other third country has with the European Union. So essentially, it's not going to get any better than this. And this is also a message that we heard on the front steps of Downing Street number 10 yesterday from the Prime Minister's lips. She also said that voting against the deal would essentially, as you said, Nathan, would essentially leave the UK back at square one and unable to deal with the other challenges that face this country.
Marcus, thank you. Also with us from London, Bloomberg Managing Editor for European Government, Flavia Krauss-Jackson. And, you know, Flavia, Marcus mentioned it. He says that there could possibly be room for tweaks to this deal. But at the same time, May is indicating that this is about the best deal that she can hammer out here. I guess that kind of gives some of the reason why we saw several of May's top cabinet ministers resign this morning.
Yes, exactly. I mean, Dominic Raab kind of opened the floodgates this morning. More have followed. She cut quite a lonely figure in Parliament. It was very obvious that there were only a handful of loyalists that were flanking her. There were people like Michael Gove who were not there. You know, he's another one who could resign later on. The question is, how much pain can she take? What was interesting, I thought, was that she cut a much more confident figure in Parliament today than she did yesterday in her sort of hollow victory speech, where really she sounded quite sad. Today she sort of said, listen, I'm giving you a heavy dose of reality. This is as good as it gets. It's almost as if she knew this was coming, but she is determined to see it through the bitter end.
Yeah, and with the idea that there could be an extension of the implementation period here, I mean, I guess she could argue that it gives her some breathing room, but at the same time, hardline Brexiteers want to get out ASAP.
Yeah, I mean, there is nothing, absolutely nothing in this deal that they can get behind. And in the cold light of day, it became very obvious once they digested that 600 albatross of a statement that really it would be very, very hard to sort of try and fudge that into anything but what it is. It's a compromise. I think May made a convincing case in Parliament that, you know, given the circumstances, given the limitations, this is as good as it gets.
As convincing as that case may have been, is it convincing enough for May to hold on to power? There have been a couple of, more than a couple of members of
yep.
her own party who have submitted letters of no confidence. Is she in danger of losing power here?
Right. This, yes, is a short answer. She showed no signs of resigning, which is something we were sort of slightly concerned about or thought could happen. The threshold is 48 letters. We believe that, you know, people are sending the letters in, but we have been here before. How many stories have we written saying these letters are coming? Until Graham Brady says, I have that number, one should be wary of speculating.
At the same time, you know, the Brexit minister has resigned. Members of May advisors who were tasked with getting this deal through are submitting their letters of resignation as well. As confident as May is sounding right now, I mean, did she sort of turn things around for herself?
Look, I mean, I think we will know at the end of today whether those letters will actually materialize. And then, obviously, she's in trouble. The thing to remember, of course, is that, you know, she is showing no signs of falling on her sword. They can trigger a leadership challenge. She can have a confidence vote that she may win because the Eurosceptics don't have the numbers to launch a leadership challenge. They may not have the numbers to get rid of her.
Bloomberg Managing Editor for European Government Flavia Krauss-Jackson, along with Bloomberg Daybreak Europe anchor Marcus Carlson, joining us from London, where Theresa May has given a strong defense of her plan to have the UK leave the European Union. Thank you to you both. Now let's get the check on the markets now. Bloomberg Business Flash with Karen Moscow. Good morning, Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. And the pound was slumping before Theresa May's comments. It remains that way now. British bonds continue to jump. And right now, the pound is down 1.5% against the dollar at $1.2804. The euro this morning also lower at $1.1296. The yen is at 113.42. S&P futures are higher. They're up about 5 points. Dow futures up 42. NASDAQ futures up 32. The DAX in Germany is little change, while the FTSE 100 is also little change. 10-year Treasury up 6/32, yield 3.10%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.84%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.5% or 23 cents to $56.03 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.1%, up $1.30 to $12.1130. An ounce. And Walmart, JCPenney, and Nordstrom are among companies scheduled to report earnings today. We also have a number of economic reports out today, including one on retail sales at 8:30 Wall Street time, along with the import price index and the weekly report on initial jobless claims. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, more breaking news. Saudi prosecutors say they plan to seek the death penalty for the killers of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. He was killed in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul last month. Prosecutors also say that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman had no knowledge of Khashoggi's death. The confirmed death toll from the wildfire in Northern California is now at 56. Authorities say about 130 people are unaccounted for. In the NBA, the Knicks and Nets lost. The Celtics and Wizards were winners. In the NHL, the Bruins and Capitals lost. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. We're coming up on 5:54 on Wall Street. Let's check in now with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics, expert data-driven commentary on breaking news, and in our London Bureau, Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan. The breaking news, of course, this morning, UK Prime Minister Theresa May defending her Brexit deal, even as members of her own cabinet resign. Theresa Raphael says this is the political divide that is going to determine Brexit. What's she saying this morning?
Well, I mean, the situation that we have to start out with is, where does this leave Theresa May? And as you've been saying all morning, it's in a very dicey situation. So if we're going to proceed on how we're going to assess this deal that she's achieved with Brussels, what are we going to do? Are we going to assume that she's going to stay, or are we going to just look at the deal as it stands? And I think for you and I right now, let's assume that she survives this little political difficulty that she's in right now. And I mean, she's done it before.
Yeah. And she gave no indication she's going to resign. And exactly. She laid out the alternatives. It's either this deal, no deal, or something else. So, I mean, what is that something else?
Well, I mean, it's an excellent question. And for that something else, you would naturally think that you could turn to the opposition Labour Party, which has had 2 years to come up with a plan of its own. And it has not. All it's produced are six tests that it will use to assess whatever it is that the government comes up with. These six tests were always going to be impossible to pass. So now where we're at is that we don't have a Labour Party plan that anyone could vote for as an alternative.
Yeah, we did hear from the Labour Party leader, Jeremy Corbyn. He says that May has to withdraw what he calls a half-baked Brexit deal. Are there any Labour votes for this?
Well, I mean, Labour has come through in the past to support Theresa May, and those votes matter all the more now because the parliamentary arithmetic has always been very tight because May's only got a slender parliamentary majority, and she's been coming under fire all this time from her own party. But the idea of a Labour prime minister, or Labour minister rather, jumping ship against the advice of the leadership and supporting Theresa May will be a much more consequential thing this time around.
Now, what's prevented Labour in the first place from producing its own alternative?
Yeah, you know, this is an excellent question. And really, it comes down to the whims of the will of Jeremy Corbyn. You know, he's always viewed Brexit as more of a distraction than anything else. He's been much more focused on reordering the UK economy, proposals such as nationalizing key industries. And this is one of the reasons why you've not seen a solid Labour plan that can be presented as an alternative to what the Conservatives are putting forward today. So the risk is that a Labour lawmaker that opposes the Theresa May plan will then push Britain into the no-deal scenario that absolutely nobody wants.
Of course, another big risk when it comes to Brexit is when it comes to British banks. And Lionel Laurent is writing about that, saying bankers get absolutely nothing from Brexit, and we definitely have seen British bank stocks plummet this morning on the news today.
Yeah, I mean, we want to start about what it is that British banks are losing. There's free access to sales and business across the European bloc. And now the proposal here with the Theresa May plan is access under a so-called equivalence regime. And what that means is that you can operate across the EU provided you've got similar financial regulations. The problem here is, you know, it's obviously completely inferior to where we are now. And it's something that Brussels can decide to withdraw at any time. It's not a firm footing for conducting business across the European Union.
In our last 30 seconds here, Jen, is there anything good for the financial services industry from this draft?
Well, insofar as it proposes a commitment to preserving financial stability and market integrity, that's great for London's crucial role in the derivatives industry, which gets up to about $400 trillion. It's not nothing. But the best thing to say for it is that the transition period it includes allows firms more time to move across the channel and set up shop in Europe.
Bloomberg opinion editor Jennifer Ryan joining us from London, where Theresa May has been defending her deal for Brexit. Of course, you can find all these stories and more Bloomberg opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion on the Bloomberg terminal. Type in OPIN Go. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.